The Robber Barons, William Vanderbilt, Part 2, The Public Be Damned. Now, adding to Vanderbilt's woes was the steady attack of Jay Gould between 1873 and 1879. Gould rounded out during those years a nationwide railroad system, adding the Union Pacific in the west. Now, the Wabash east of the Mississippi River was going to be a problem because Gould threatened to divert all of his western traffic from the New York Central unless he was given an interest in Vanderbilt's railroads. Of course, that was simply unthinkable. Cornelius would have sent his ghost from the grave to stop such talk. Then at the same time, there were the exposures of the Hepburn Committee of the New York State Legislature. In 1879, they made known the secret agreements between the heads of the railroads and the oil refiners. There were complaints of tyranny over the cost of milk in New York, 50% of which was alleged to be paid as tribute to Vanderbilt. There were complaints that Vanderbilt's freight service was deliberately held to a snail's pace, so that the extra fare, the merchant's express, quote, would be forced on shippers. So in other words, he's slowing down the railroad so that you can send faster trains, which of course cost more to provide your goods. And then, of course, knowledge that Vanderbilt held 87% of the New York Central stock. That aroused real fear and envy. Vanderbilt was actually threatened with special taxation by the state of New York, to which Vanderbilt simply meant blackmail of politicians. One day, Billy Vanderbilt, William Vanderbilt, exploded before a newspaper shouting, quote, "The public be damned," end of quote. Now, this has been completely misinterpreted and misunderstood. After you're listening to all the things that he's alleged to have done, okay, the milk thing, the slowing down of the rail service to get all of that, and you make the assumption that he says, you know what, I don't care what the public thinks. It's business. That's just the way it is. And that has absolutely nothing to do with the situation. Here's what happened. Billy has been represented as a paragon of capitalist despotism. In reality, he had simply been explaining why the fast extra fare mail train between New York and Chicago was being eliminated. It wasn't making money. But the public found that railroad to be both useful and convenient. And they expected him, because of how much money he made, to simply accommodate them. So Vanderbilt's famous outburst had thrown a harsh light upon seemingly the absolute power enjoyed by the railroad barons. So he is trying to get rid of a line that's not making any money. And the people just think, hey, it is a really neat idea. We don't care you're not making any money. Just keep it going anyway. What's it to you? And he's saying, well, let the public be damned. If the railroad's not making money, I'm going to shut it down. Had nothing to do with all the complaints of the legislature. But that quote has been used to just beat the living daylights out of all of the robber barons then later on. And it kind of sums up that, you know, he's just over rich and he could care less about anybody. At any rate, Vanderbilt, because of the assaults made on him in the New York legislature and in the press, came to the conclusion that it was a mistake for one individual to own a controlling interest in a great corporation like the New York Central. And it was also a mistake to have so many of the family's eggs in one basket. And he actually thought it would be better both for him, his family, and the company if ownership in the New York Central was distributed as widely as possible. So, through a syndicate headed by J.P. Morgan of Drexel Morgan & Company, 250,000 shares of New York Central stock was sold to British and American investors for $130 a share. This was all done in absolute profound secrecy. Morgan announced the deal only after it had been completed. The Morgan Group's cut of the pie was $3 million, and William Vanderbilt received $30 million in cash. Plus, J.P. Morgan gained the financial prestige of having skillfully executed one of the most remarkable railroad transactions, one which silenced the public on one hand and on the other allayed the fears or hostilities felt by the railroad barons in adjacent territories. For example, Mr. Gould was conciliated. Well, that's a plus. That doesn't happen very often. In addition, competitive war with his Wabash St. Louis Pacific Railroad was also averted, I should say. And J.P. Morgan entered the New York City Board of Directors, New York Central Board of Directors, acting as its fiscal agent. After the recovery of 1879, the Vanderbilt system, New York Central, like its neighbor, the Penn system, reinvested its great profits. It extended its line to more distant points. It created working agreements with feeder railroads. And now a general railroad construction began after a long lull and resumed on a far greater scale between 1880 and 1890. During that period, five trunk lines moved between the Atlantic and Chicago. Middle railroads radiated out of Chicago. The Rockies added four additional transcontinental lines, virtually completing the area to the Pacific coast. And 70,000 more lines of railroad track was laid. By the 1880s, all railroads in a competitive field had pooling agreements, or at least gentlemen agreements with rivals. But still, there was constant rate wars with, of course, our old friend Jay Gould, who was the purest of the railroad mercenaries of his time. Now, one of the things that you want to be thinking about is, if you like political cartoons, and I've mentioned this before, there is a lot of cartooning on the big railroads in the late 1880s through the 1890s. Of course, they're incredible. They're showing how they're oppressing the farmers and all sorts of other stuff, because a lot of these rail lines, if you're in Nebraska, you don't have a lot of choices of how many train services you can use to ship your wheat or your cattle or anything else. And so there's this manipulation that goes on. But as you can see, even during the downturn in the 1870s, they're still making tons of money. It's absolutely unbelievable. But the public be damned was not a general concept of rich versus poor. It was just, I want to get rid of this train, and I don't care. It's not making any money. At any rate, the sources for this: The Robber Barons by Matthew Josephson, America in the Gilded Age by Cashman, The Age of Moguls, The Story of Robber Barons and Tycoons by Holbrook. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the new website, historyaccordingtobob.com or sumahistorica.com, and check everything out. There's all kinds of stuff. You can access my blog from there. You can access a variety of other things. Much more detailed background on the various sets and deals and all kinds of stuff. And as always, please feel free to support us with a donation. Thank you very much.